Chapter 44. Consettle. He did not speak warmly. His pride could not endure the pity which Edward's visit and errand tacitly implied. Yet, in the other affair, his heart went with Edward. He was on the same beat for paying off old debts himself. "Sithee, Mr. Springrove is here," he said, "at the foot of the staircase." His sister descended the creaking old steps with a faltering tread, and stood in the firelight from the hearth. She extended her hand to Springrove, welcoming him by a mere motion of the lip, her eyes averted, a habit which had engendered itself in her since the beginning of her illness and defamation. Owen opened the door, and went out, leaving the lovers alone. It was the first time they had met since the memorable night at Southampton. "I will get a light," she said, with a little embarrassment. "No, don't please, Cytherea," said Edward softly. "Come and sit down with me." "Oh yes. I ought to have asked you to," she returned timidly. "Everybody sits in the chimney corner in this parish. You sit on that side. I'll sit here." Two recesses, one on the right, one on the left hand, were cut in the inside of the fireplace, and here they sat down facing each other, on benches fitted to the recesses, the fire glowing on the hearth between their feet. Its ruddy light shone on the underslopes of their faces, and spread out over the floor of the room with the low horizontality of the setting sun, giving to every grain of sand and tumor in the paving a long shadow towards the door. Edward looked at his pale love through the thin azure twines of smoke that went up like ringlets between them, and invested her, as seen through its medium, with the shadowy appearance of a phantom. Nothing is so potent for coaxing back the lost eyes of a woman as a discreet silence in the man who has so lost them, and thus the patient Edward coaxed hers. After lingering on the hearth for half a minute, waiting in vain for another word from him, they were lifted into his face. He was ready primed to receive them. "Cytherea, will you marry me?" he said. He could not wait in his original position till the answer came. Stepping across the front of the fire to her own side of the chimney corner, he reclined at her feet, and searched for her hand. She continued in silence a while. "Edward, I can never be anybody's wife," she then said sadly, and with firmness. "Think of it in every light," he pleaded. "The light of love, first. Then, when you have done that, see how wise a step it would be. I can only offer you poverty as yet, but I do so long to secure you from the intrusion of that unpleasant past, which will often and always be thrust before you, as long as you live the shrinking solitary life you do now, a life which purity chooses, it may be, but to the outside world it appears like the enforced loneliness of neglect and scorn, and tongues are busy inventing a reason for it which does not exist. I know all about it," she said hastily, "and those are the grounds of my refusal. You and Owen know the whole truth, the two I love best on earth, and I am content. But the scandal will be continually repeated, and I can never give anyone the opportunity of saying to you that your wife..." She utterly broke down and wept. "Don't, my own darling," he entreated. "Don't, Cytherea. Please to leave me, we will be friends, Edward, but don't press me, my mind is made up, I will not marry you, or any man under the present ambiguous circumstances, never will I have said it. Never." They were both silent. He listlessly regarded the illuminated blackness overhead, where long flakes of soot floated from the sides, and bars of the chimney throat like tattered banners in ancient aisles, whilst through the square opening in the midst one or two bright stars looked down upon them from the grey March sky. The sight seemed to cheer him. "At any rate you will love me?" he murmured to her. "Yes, always, forever and forever." He kissed her once, twice, three times, and arose to his feet, slowly withdrawing himself from her side towards the door. Cytherea remained with her gaze fixed on the fire. Edward went out grieving, but hope was not extinguished even now. He smelt the fragrance of a cigar, and immediately afterward saw a small red star of fire against the darkness of the hedge. Gray was pacing up and down the lane, smoking as he walked. Springrove told him the result of the interview. "You are a good fellow, Edward," apostrophe he said, "but I think my sister is right. ... I wish you would believe Manston a villain, as I do," apostrophe said Springrove. "It would be absurd of me to say that I like him now family feeling prevents it, but I cannot in honesty say deliberately that he is a bad man." ... Edward could keep the secret of Manston's coercion of Miss Aldclyffe and the matter of the houses a secret no longer. He told Owen the whole story. "That's one thing," ... he continued, "but not all. What do you think of this? I have discovered that he went to Budmouth Post Office for a letter the day before the first advertisement for his wife appeared in the papers. One was there for him, and it was directed in his wife's handwriting, as I can prove. This was not till after the marriage with Cytherea, it is true, but if, as it seems to show, the advertising was a farce, there is a strong presumption that the rest of the piece was." ... Owen was too astounded to speak. He dropped his cigar and fixed his eyes upon his companion. "Collusion." ... Yes. ... With his first wife? ... Yes, with his wife. I am firmly persuaded of it. ... What did you discover? ... That he fetched from the post office at Budmouth a letter from her the day before the first advertisement appeared. ... Gray was lost in a long consideration. "Ah." ... He said, "It would be difficult to prove anything of that sort now. The writing could not be sworn to, and if he is guilty the letter is destroyed." ... I have other suspicions. ... Yes, as you said, interrupted Owen, who had not till now been able to form the complicated set of ideas necessary for picturing the position. "Yes, there is this to be remembered. Cytherea had been taken from him before that letter came, and his knowledge of his wife's existence could not have originated till after the wedding. I could have sworn he believed her dead then. His manner was unmistakable." ... "Well, I have other suspicions." ... repeated Edward. "And if I only had the right, if I were her husband or brother, he should be convicted of bigamy yet." ... The reproof was not needed. ... said Owen, with a little bitterness. "What can I do, a man with neither money nor friends, whilst Manston has Miss Aldclyffe and all her fortune to back him up? God only knows what lies between the mistress and her steward, but since this has transpired, if it is true I can believe the connection to be even an unworthy one, a thing I certainly never so much as owned to myself before." ... 3. The 5th of March, Edward's disclosure had the effect of directing Owen Gray's thoughts into an entirely new and uncommon channel. On the Monday after Springrove's visit, Owen had walked to the top of a hill in the neighborhood of Tolchurch, a wild hill that had no name, beside a barren down where it never looked like summer. In the intensity of his meditations on the ever-present subject, he sat down on a weather-beaten boundary stone, gazing towards the distant valley, seeing only Manston's imagined form. Had his defenseless sister been trifled with? That was the question which affected him. Her refusal of Edward as a husband was, he knew, dictated solely by a humiliated sense of inadequacy to him in repute, and had not been formed till since the slanderous tale accounting for her seclusion had been circulated. Was it not true, as Edward had hinted, that he, her brother, was neglecting his duty towards her in allowing Manston to thrive unquestioned, whilst she was hiding her head for no fault at all? Was it possible that Manston was sensuous villain enough to have contemplated, at any moment before the marriage with Cytherea, the return of his first wife, when he should have grown weary of his new toy? had he believed that, by a skillful manipulation of such circumstances as chance would throw in his way, he could escape all suspicion of having known that she lived? Only one fact within his own direct knowledge afforded the least ground for such a supposition. It was that, possessed by a woman only in the humble and unprotected station of a lady's hired companion, his sister's beauty might scarcely have been sufficient to induce a selfish man like Manston to make her his wife, unless he had foreseen the possibility of getting rid of her again. But for that stratagem of Manston's in relation to the Springroves, Owen thought, Cythie might now have been the happy wife of Edward. True, that he influenced Miss Aldclyffe only rests on Edward's suspicions, but the grounds are good, the probability is strong. He went indoors and questioned Cytherea. On the night of the fire, who first said that Mrs. Manston was burned? He asked. I don't know who started the report. Was it Manston? It was certainly not he. All doubt on the subject was removed before he came to the spot that I am certain of. Everybody knew that she did not escape after the house was on fire, and thus all overlooked the fact that she might have left before. Of course, that would have seemed such an improbable thing for anybody to do. Yes, until the porter's story of her irritation and doubt as to her course made it natural. What settled the matter at the inquest, said Cytherea, was Mr. Manston's evidence that the watch was his wife's. He was sure of that, wasn't he? I believe he said he was certain of it. It might have been hers left behind in her perturbation, as they say it was impossible as that seems at first sight. Yes, on the whole, he might have believed in her death. I know by several proofs that then, and at least for some time after, he had no other thought than that she was dead. I now think that before the porter's confession he knew something about her, though not that she lived. Why do you? From what he said to me on the evening of the wedding day, when I had fastened myself in the room at the hotel after Edward's visit. He must have suspected that I knew something, for he was irritated and in a passion of uneasy doubt. He said, "You don't suppose my first wife has come to light again, madam, surely?" Directly he had let the remark slip out, he seemed anxious to withdraw it. That's odd, said Owen. I thought it very odd. Still, we must remember he might only have hit upon the thought by accident, in doubt as to your motive. Yes, the great point to discover remains the same as ever: did he doubt his first impression of her death, before he married you? I can't help thinking he did, although he was so astounded at our news that night. Edward swears he did. It was perhaps only a short time before, said Cytherea, when he could hardly recede from having me. Seasoning justice with mercy as usual, Cytherea. 'Tis unfair to yourself to talk like that. If I could only bring him to ruin as a bigamist, supposing him to be one, I should die happy. That's what we must find out by fair means or foul. Was he a willful bigamist? It is no use trying, Owen. You would have to employ a solicitor, and how can you do that? I can't at all. I know that very well. But neither do I altogether wish to. At present, a lawyer must have a case facts to go upon. That means, now they are scarce at present, as scarce as money is with us, and till we have found more money there is no hurry for a lawyer. Perhaps by the time we have the facts we shall have the money. The only thing we lose in working alone in this way is time, not the issue. For the fruit that one mind matures in a 12-month forms a more perfectly organized whole than that of 12 minds in 1 month, especially if the interests of the single one are vitally concerned, and those of the 12 are only hired. But there is not only my mind available. You are a shrewd woman, Cythie, and Edward is an earnest ally, Then, if we really get a sure footing for a criminal prosecution, the Crown will take up the case. ... I don't much care to press on in the matter, she murmured. What good can it do us, Owen, after all? Selfishly speaking, it will do this good, that all the facts of your journey to Southampton will become known, and the scandal will die. Besides, Manston will have to suffer it's an act of justice to you, and to other women, and to Edward Springrove. He now thought it necessary to tell her of the real nature of the Springroves' obligation to Miss Aldclyffe and their nearly certain knowledge that Manston was the prime mover in effecting their embarrassment. Her face flushed as she listened. And now, he said, our first undertaking is to find out where Mrs. Manston lived during the separation. Next, when the first communications passed between them after the fire. If we only had Miss Aldclyffe's countenance and assistance as I... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.